The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
What a day we have coming your way Saturday. UFC 254, Fight Island, special early start time. Main event is for the undisputed lightweight championship, the unbeaten Khabib Nurmagomedov taking on Justin Gaethje. Prelims start at noon Eastern on ESPN2, ESPN Plus, and ESPN Deportes. Main card is on pay-per-view at 2 Eastern. To order the main card in English and Spanish, go to ESPNplus.com/PPV. Okay, we're going to do something a little differently than the way we usually do. Sneaky Hembo has this question. Dak Prescott, we know he's hurt. Aside from him, who was the last quarterback to win a game for the Cowboys as the starter? And because we had a moment before the top of the hour, I'm going to let everybody get in here and try and guess. Who wants to throw their first answer out here?
I mean, it can't be Romo. That's too easy, right? Romo is too easy.
You tell me. Go ahead, Dominique. Who do you think it is? Dominique.
Romo, I guess. I'll stick with Romo. I don't know.
Okay. Ryan Clark?
Kellen Moore.
Okay. Desmond Howard?
I like that Kellen Moore pick. I'm going to have to get on RC's coattails and go Kellen Moore, too.
Dan Graziano sitting back with a contented smile on his face.
I don't know. I was going to say Kellen Moore, but these guys, I guess we're all on the same page. So the fact that three of us are saying it makes me believe it can't possibly be Kellen Moore.
It's and
wrong.
That's correct.
It's
Take
wrong.
A look, everybody. The last Cowboys quarterback to win was Matt Cassel.
Matt Cassel.
Week 13 of 2015.
He could have given us 100 guesses.
What? Hembo remains unbeaten. This is there's going to be no living with Hembo.
I didn't know he played for the Cowboys. I'm going to be honest.
Guessed.
Nobody did.
White, Staubach, before Cassel.
I know he played.
There's going to be no living with Hembo. Anyway, with that thought, we welcome you back to another hour of Get Up. We come to you live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. This is the football crew this morning. Jessica Mendoza is standing by because we will begin and get up with game one, where the Hollywood Stars were in the center of all the action. We've got the World Series covered for you right off the bat. Then, they've reached a terrible place in Texas. The finger pointing has begun. Does Jerry have to do something before the season gets away? We'll take you live there. And what does Tua time mean for his team this season? Will he be the best of the rookie quarterbacks right away? We'll answer those questions and many more as we get up with you starting right now. And it begins, Jessica Mendoza with the game of the night. Chapter one of the World Series, Globe Life Field in Texas. Rays, Dodgers, Tyler Glasnow against Clayton Kershaw. And right off the bat, Jess, Kershaw was in some trouble in the first and he got out of it.
Could not land his breaking ball. This was a pitch he was having trouble. He was spiking it, could not get the big swing and miss, but he had two outs, being able to cover his position off the mound, close play to get him out of that tough first inning.
Got out without giving up a run in the first, and then he would start to cruise. You know he's got to shut down Randy Arozarena in this series, and he did last night.
How about a heavy diet of breaking balls? I mean, he did not see, I think it was five fastballs in all of his at-bats. It was changeups. It was sliders. It was breaking balls. They knew this is the bat you have to keep off the bases, and they were successful.
So they're scoreless in the bottom of the fourth, and then Cody Bellinger took care of that with this big swing.
Don't throw him there! Low and in, Cody Bellinger. I mean, Game 7, he was the hero. The huge home run, he carries it into Game 1. This is how the Dodgers first got on the board.
That was how he celebrated it. Got to be careful after he hurt the shoulder on the celebration the other day. So it's 2-0 in the Dodgers' favor. And then Mookie Betts had an inning to remember, Jess.
Did you see that jump? I mean, Mike's needing to watch him. He goes to throw. Mookie Betts already has the base stolen. Remember, he got on base with a walk, stole second easily, and he steals third base. Greeny, when have we seen a stolen base period in baseball, let alone back-to-back stolen bases?
Historic for Betts. He would eventually score. Dodgers take a 3-1 lead. And now it's Glasnow facing Will Smith. And now that's going to be all for Tyler Glasnow.
And Will Smith, this was kind of the nail in the coffin because you knew with the way that Kershaw was dealing, this is exactly what the Dodgers needed, just those four runs.
in the sixth. Here's Kershaw with two outs, going to get a Rosarena again. He would retire 17 of the last 18 batters that he faced.
You know, the sixth inning has been his Achilles heel. For him to get through this, he wanted to come back out in the seventh, but Dave Roberts smart and going into the bullpen.
And then that would set the stage for Mookie Betts to put the capper on his spectacular night. That's a solo home run. So he did it all last night, and the Dodgers did it all as well. They take game one by a final score of 8-3. So chapter one goes to the Hollywood Stars, with Kershaw and Betts being at the center of it all. And you got to feel good for Kershaw. And for all the struggles that he's had in the postseason, and we all know he's had those, he also has had a lot of good games. Yesterday is his fourth postseason outing with two or fewer hits allowed in six or more innings of work, which ties the record with Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander. So any conversation about last night, Jessica, really has to start with him. How did Kershaw dominate the Rays in game one?
The swing and miss. I mean, his stuff. We talked about him not landing the slider. Oh, he found it in that second inning. He had 38 swings, 19 were misses. That's a 50%. I'll go ahead and do the math for you. He's never done that in his career. In fact, no starting pitcher has ever had a 50% swing and miss. If you can't make contact, if you're not able to hit the ball and even put it into play, you have zero chance. And Clayton Kershaw, for as good as he's been and all the things we can talk about him being the GOAT and everything, this is when it matters for him. He has to prove himself in October. He did so in game one of the World Series.
And so now the Rays will send Blake Snell to the mound tonight to try and even things up. And you and I had a chat on SportsCenter this morning before we came on the air with Get Up. They have a big edge tonight, the Rays do, based on scheduling and the way the Dodgers will have to go tonight.
Yeah, they have to go with a bullpen game. They're going to start Tony Gonsolin. And you think about it, the Rays were able to end that Game 7 on Saturday. The Dodgers had to go to Sunday. You're thinking it's 24 hours. They played seven straight days. That huge 24 hours allowed the Rays to set up their starting pitching the way they wanted. The Dodgers find themselves in a bit of a hole in Game 2. This is the advantage. Now, Blake Snell, we saw it with Tyler Glasnow. He had six walks. Blake Snell, 100-plus pitches in 3 1/3 inning, his last outing. He has to go after these hitters. The Dodgers are so patient. Blake Snell has the stuff. Remember, he won the Cy Young in 2018. So this is advantage Rays if Snell can throw strikes and attack this lethal Dodgers offense.
It's Jess Mendoza, who's up late at night calling these games on ESPN Radio, then getting up early with us every morning. Thank you so much, Jess. It's a pleasure. As always, we'll see you tomorrow. Meanwhile, let's get to the NFL, because following a 28-point loss at home on Monday Night Football, the Cowboys, as you well know, are 2-4, but still in first. However, multiple anonymous players seem to be publicly voicing their displeasure with Mike McCarthy and the team's coaching staff, as first reported by NFL Network. Here was McCarthy last night.
I haven't been part of any of those type of discussions. I think, like a lot of things, when you hit a part of your season or any challenge where there is negativity out there and where it comes from and who it comes from, I mean, that's something that, you know, I've never chased, but I think you do have to recognize it. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of, you know, of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting, and especially in a game of football, especially for the Dallas Cowboys.
Now, it's a tough spot early in the season, and here's Ed Werder, who has been there and done that. You have covered this team for so long, Ed, every head coach, going back to Jimmy Johnson. So with this regime and this team's performance, how would you assess the blame for the struggles in this early season?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike McCarthy said it well last night. He said the coaches have to teach and demand, and the players have to prepare and perform. So the first thing, Greeny, that occurs to me is this. The players who failed to win under the previous coaching staff are now complaining about the current staff inhibiting their ability to win. You know, clearly there's enough blame that can be widespread, and there's some for everyone involved. But the two most prevalent issues that we've seen so far are lack of effort on defense and poor ball security, and to me, both of those issues are player responsibilities. Now, I know McCarthy emphasizes protecting the football, and those are the first drills that they do every day in practice. And when I asked McCarthy about it yesterday, he said they use videotape reviews several days during the week with players to show them the proper way to secure the ball, and yet they're a league worst minus 12 in turnover ratio. You know, after the game against the Cardinals, Ezekiel Elliott took the blame for the loss, citing his two fumbles. And sometimes, Greeny, as you know, it's really that simple.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. So as they try to sort of salvage this thing, and again, I keep reminding everyone, they are in first place in the division. What are we hearing as far as areas they're hoping to improve upon in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is they have 15 turnovers and nobody else has more than 12. And I think criticism of Mike McCarthy and defensive coordinator Mike Nolan that they lack creativity is fair. And it doesn't seem that McCarthy's found many solutions to that problem or the many other issues that this team has. But one of the misconceptions is the Cowboys have lost solely because of their defense, which is last in the NFL, allowing 36 points a game. But the reality is 38% of those points allowed are the result of opponents scoring following a turnover, most often from Dak Prescott or Ezekiel Elliott. Look, they've endured an incredible number of injuries. In fact, I wonder just how much the performance against the Cardinals was a result of a realization among the players that Prescott, their most consistent playmaker, their undisputed leader, isn't returning this season and that they can't achieve their goals without him. I think these next two games, Greeny, both on the road against division opponents Washington and Philadelphia, will be really revealing about this team's character.
Really well done. Ed Werder, thank you. What a pleasure to see you. Thank you, my friend. We'll check in with you because that's, look, this is the most interesting team in the NFL to talk about right now for all of the worst possible reasons. And, Nick, I was really struck by that when he was saying ball security, effort on defense, those are player responsibility. I always think of that stuff and think, those are the little things that get buttoned up that we always credit coaches with being excellent coaches when teams don't do that. So how do you, where do you assess the blame for those kinds of things?
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, none of us are embedded in that organization, so we can't really tell you exactly what the problem is. But the truth of the matter is, just about anything that happens on the field, you can find a way to blame the players or you can find a way to blame the coaches. The problem in Dallas is you can't blame the people who constructed the team because they also own the team. And I think that's part of the issue now, too, is this team does have a lot of stars in certain situations, but I think they've made some decisions to move away from players like Byron Jones, that was a corner in a league where it seems like coverage is the most important thing on your defense. And they've made some of those decisions that I think have weakened this team. So honestly, I think Ed hit it on the head when he said that there's enough blame to go around. And I don't think Zeke Elliott is the only reason why they're winning, but the only reason why they're losing, but he's certainly not the reason why they're winning. And the same can be said for Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan, is they are not the reason why they're losing solely, but they certainly aren't doing what they need to do to make this team successful.
Yeah, and RC, I also thought it was really interesting when Ed said he sort of wondered aloud if the realization that Dak is down and not getting up again and sort of an honest understanding that that means all the things we set out to do this year are just not possible anymore. He was wondering aloud if that might have been partially responsible for how bad they looked on Monday night. I mean, you're a longtime former player. Does that make sense to you, that psychology?
No, it doesn't make sense to me unless you're weak-minded, unless you are a locker room of losers as they have been behaving after that loss on Monday night. Because I know when we would be without very good players, your thought process went that I needed to do more. And I think that's more of it. You're trying to play outside yourself. You're trying to do extra. You're stepping a little bit outside of what your actual talents are because you want to be better. And I would think that would be more so than just saying, you know what, we just want to quit. But what I will say about the players versus coaches blame is this. Think about how long it took the five heartbeats to kick out Eddie Kane Jr. They understood that the reason if their heart in the house tonight was big was because of Eddie Kane Jr. They understood that on nights like this, I wish raindrops would fall was because of Eddie Kane Jr. So when Ezekiel Elliott comes out and says, I fumbled the football, you give him a little more leeway than you give Mike McCarthy, who is more like the Big Red of the five heartbeats. He comes in late. He tries to take over. He tries to bully. And those are the people you're going to push back against. So this team needs to come together and realize there is no Dak Prescott walking back into this locker room. It's going to take synergy. It's going to take communication. It's going to take them having a relationship to move forward because they can still win the NFC East. It's not time to give up. It's time to step up and help Andy Dalton fill the place of your leader and your best football player, Dak Prescott.
Now, look, I mean, Rick Pitino was the one who famously said, Kevin McHale's not walking through that door. Larry Bird is not walking through that door. And the next thing you knew, he was back in college. So you can say whatever you want. The whole thing doesn't necessarily go well when all the best players are injured. Speaking of the Cowboys, much more on them as we continue this hour. Keyshawn Johnson will step across the hall from ESPN Radio and give his thoughts. Should they be thinking playoffs or just blowing it all up in Big D. Plus, the time is now for Tua. Why did Miami make this move? Could anyone else benefit from a little Fitz magic? We will answer those questions and more as we get up with you on ESPN.
With the fifth pick in the 2020 NFL Draft, the Miami Dolphins select Tua Tagovailoa. Hard work, putting in hard time,
no sleep. That's the way we grind. And here comes Tua.
This has been a dream growing up. Being able to go out there and represent my family in a Dolphins jersey, it's a blessing.
The Tua era begins. It's everyday showtime.
And begin it does, and Tua's going to have some big shoes to fill because Ryan Fitzpatrick has been playing really well. You see the numbers, ranks in the top 10 in QBR and completion percentage. They're one game out of first. Within the last half hour, Dolphins coach Brian Flores discussed his decision to make the switch right now.
We just feel like, this was the best move for our team right now. And, look, Fitz has done a great job. He's been productive. His leadership's been great. It's not an easy decision, for me or us as an organization, but we felt like, for the team now, moving forward, this is the move we needed to make.
And so the move they've made indeed. And so let me bring Desmond in here first, because obviously you cover the college game for us. You saw all of Tua's career. Why don't you give us a look at what you expect things to look like for him now in an NFL uniform?
I tell you what, guys, I think that he's going to bring an added dimension to their passing game because he's amazingly accurate. He throws a fantastic deep ball. And when he was in college, the play that stood out to me the most is when he really jumped on the scene. It was a national championship game, and they were playing Georgia. Now, they're in the red zone right now. He can't find the open receiver. Don't forget, this is overtime, the biggest game of his life. He's doing the tour. He's holding the ball on too long, trying to make a play happen. My man, Nick Saban, hotter than fish grease. He's pissed. So now, what does Tua do the very next play? Look at the safety on the left hash. He wants to hold him there, so Tua's looking to his right. Holds him on safety on the hash, and then he flips the ball down the field on his left side to Devontae Smith, where he wanted to go all along. That was a next-level play. And the perfect deep ball is when the receiver does not have to break stride to catch it. He throws a great deep ball. He has some wonderful receivers that can get vertical, and Preston Williams and Devontae Parker. So now I expect their offense, if the offensive line can hold up, and that's a big if, but if they can hold up, I expect to see the Dolphins be more of a vertical passing game with Tua at the quarterback position, guys.
So I think the questions are twofold. There is the question about Tua and how good he can be, and then there's the question about the timing. Ryan Clark, you've got a team that's one game out of first, and the starting quarterback is playing well. Do you like the move, making it right now?
I didn't necessarily like the timing. I liked the way that Ryan Fitzpatrick was playing. But what this told me was that Brian Flores and the Miami Dolphins organization had a plan. And it seemed that Brian Flores has had a plan since taking over as the head coach of this team. So as Dominique said earlier, if I'm a player on that team, I accept this, I understand this because of what Brian Flores has already been as a head coach, because of the respect he has already earned. And so they had a plan to bring Tua in. They wanted him to get a week to prepare and then have another week to game plan. This looks like the right move at the right time for this organization based on what they see and what they want to do.
Now, Nick, you told me earlier you believe of all the rookie quarterbacks this year, he'll win the most games. Will they win that division? Do you give them a chance to win that division?
All right, now I think that might be a little bit off the wall, but I do think that Tua is going to play well because, I mean, he's been working day and night to get back into this position to play. And I think that the team is going to rock with him as long as they can rock with him because he's that good of a player.
I rock with you,
guys.
No question about it. And I will say this, and here's a controversial opinion as we look over the shoulder of Desmond Howard, but I've had this fight with many people. That's a better album than Thriller. That is a better album than Thriller. I will defend that. Go ahead. Feel free to at me. Off the Wall is a better album than Thriller. At me.
Get him, Greenberg.
Go ahead. Let's have this fight. See on radio today, noon. We'll argue about this.
No argument there. There's nothing to argue about. It's a fact.
We'll continue as we go. The poll question. That's right. I'm sorry. I forgot about my funny poll. So who do you think is going to win the AFC East? You can check out my Twitter page at ESPN Greeny. Bills, Dolphins, Patriots, or other. Those are the four options. Right now, other not doing so well, and neither is the fourth team in that division. As we continue, things going from bad to worse in Dallas. Can they salvage the situation? Keyshawn Johnson will be here to answer that question and more. It's Get Up on ESPN. Back on Get Up, and how about this play last night? This is going to be Yandy Diaz grounding to third, and look at Justin Turner. Full extension, gathers himself, and makes the play. Dodgers went on to win it 8-3. Clayton Kershaw allowed just one run, thanks at least in some part to web gems like that one by Justin Turner. Dodgers up one game to none in the World Series. Coming up, the Steelers' dominating defense this weekend reminded RC of one of his favorite teams, and it's not the one you're expecting. He'll explain his tweets next.
Baker.
Bruh. Lord. As everyone laughs at the way I read your tweet. I can't even do it with a straight face. All right, it's always fun. Here we go. Ryan Clark, who's the most entertaining follow on Twitter, will explain some of the things that he has posted for your pleasure. And here's number one. Ryan tweeted, has to be a welcome sign for Frank Reich and the Colts to see this Phillip Rivers. You know, we just told this offensive lineman, I told you all, if you give me some dadgum time, I'd get this son of a biscuit eater into the Mickey Ficky end zone. Ryan, explain that tweet.
Well, you know, man, Phil doesn't curse. So every time you hear him mic'd up, he's saying like, dadgum it and son of a biscuit eater and Mickey Ficky. We all know what those words mean, but it's just Phil being excited. Listen. They had just lost to the Browns. Phillip Rivers throws two interceptions. You get down to the Cincinnati Bengals and a very bad football team early. This team could have folded because now you had to depend on Phillip Rivers to actually play quarterback. He goes for over 370 yards, 20-something completions, three touchdowns. You got the good Phillip Rivers. You got the guy that you thought if you had him, he was the perfect complement to this team. And so you know that those faux curse words and that faux swearing was coming out at a rapid rate with that country twang, and they were absolutely loving it. If you're Frank Wright, you got to get this dude to show up next week and the week after. And whatever he has to say, whatever are the child-friendly words that he can use at his house with his 27 children and his nine dogs, you let him use those words because he was on fire.
Yeah, and then maybe continue to win some Mickey Ficky games. Okay, next one. RC tweet number two. This kill everybody and let the paramedics sort them out defense the Steelers are playing has me a little teary-eyed. Got me looking for Joe Kane to hand the ball off to Darnell Jefferson on offense. This is good old program defense. RC, explain that tweet.
Everybody's favorite linebacker is Elvin Mack. You can say whatever you want. You can talk about Lawrence Taylor. You can bring it back to Pat Swilling, Ricky Jackson. None of those dudes could pair to Elvin Mack. Elvin Mack couldn't spell Adidas. Alvin Mack didn't know none of that stuff, but he knew football and he knew film. And what he said was, the most important play is kill everybody and let the paramedics sort them out. And that's what the Pittsburgh Steelers were doing. Alvin Mack was so good and that defense was so good and Latimer got a seat at the table that we thought that Joe Kane, who was 160 pounds, and Darnell Jefferson, played by Omar Epps, who was the all-time worst TV running back, was actually good. That's the type of defense the Pittsburgh Steelers played. It didn't matter if Ben Roethlisberger showed up, if Chase Claypool showed up, if Juju Smith-Schuster showed up. They were able to score enough points on defense to win the game. That's how well they played.
The performance art of Ryan Clark has Dominique. I mean, Keyshawn is laughing over here the whole time. Phenomenal. All right, one more, RC. This one, you aimed at yourself. Nope, don't you tweet it, Ryan Clark. Don't you do it. Don't you say what you've been saying since last week when Dak got hurt. Don't you say it. Nope, he isn't going to say it. I'm not going to say it. I hope I don't say it. Ryan Clark, explain that tweet.
Listen, I felt like Day-Day felt when Craig came to Rancho Cucamonga. He ran next door to talk to the little Latina lady, and he was trying to get her number. And you know what Day-Day said? He ain't going to get it. Nah, he ain't going to get it. I hope he don't get it. That's how I felt last night watching the Dallas Cowboys, or Monday night watching the Dallas Cowboys, because I told y'all, Y'all can get the same bacon cheeseburger. See, Dak Prescott was bacon. Think about you pork lovers. When you put bacon on anything, it tastes better. You put bacon on a breakfast burrito, it's better. Bacon on a biscuit, it's better. Bacon on a hamburger, it is better. That's what Dak Prescott was for this team. This team was terrible, but he was bacon. You know what Andy Dalton is? Just like I told y'all he was. He's turkey bacon. It kind of looks the same. You still have some of the same pieces, but you got to cook it different. You can't put turkey bacon in the pan. You got to do it on a George Foreman because it falls apart. It's not as crispy. It doesn't fix everything and make it feel good, make it taste good to you. Now y'all all want bacon. Y'all thought y'all didn't want to eat pork no more. I bet you want the pork back now when you got 10 points, when it was really 3 the whole game, when you get beat by a team that only completes 9 passes. Y'all don't want the fake stuff no more, so we not doing no turkey bacon. We ain't doing no Splenda. We ain't doing no stevia. You go get you the real pork, because a pig ain't never did nothing to me. I'm done. I'm not doing no more show.
I don't even know what to say. That was a tour de force from Ryan Clark, dropping the mic, explaining his tweets. All right, and with all of that, Keyshawn, follow that. Good luck to you. Here we go. Let's talk about the Cowboys. We've talked about them a lot. Keyshawn, of course, coming from across the hall, KJZ, every morning on ESPN Radio. Let's play you the Mike McCarthy from last night. After the report surfaced from NFL Network, citing anonymous Cowboys players criticizing the coaches, here was Mike McCarthy addressing that last night.
I haven't been part of any of those type of discussions. I think, like a lot of things, when you hit a part of your season or any challenge where there is negativity out there and where it comes from and who it comes from, I mean, that's something that, you know, I've never chased, but I think you do have to recognize it. I think it's important to handle things as men. I mean, if you do have something to say publicly that is of, you know, of most importance, I think it's important to say it to the individual, particularly in a group dynamic setting, and especially in a game of football, especially for the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, so now they've reached that stage of being a bad football team, Keyshawn. Now there are anonymous quotes criticizing the coaching staff. What's your number one takeaway from the disaster right now that is Dallas?
Well, sometimes you look at it and you go, there's smoke, there's fire. There's something. There's something that certain players feel about. But what I would say is, if you're a player, man, put your name to it. I don't have no problem saying that. I don't like Greeny. It ain't that big of a deal. We can work together and we can win, but I don't like you, right? I mean, so go ahead and say you don't like the scheme. My name is such and such. I don't like the scheme. They don't teach me well. Rather than going telling somebody on a little sidebar and doing those things, because Mike McCarthy and Mike Nolan didn't drop that football. Michael Gallup did by not placing his hands. He act like he didn't know how to catch the football. His hands was turning all tight. He's a professional wide receiver. You know, missing tackles. Flat-footed in the secondary, allowing Christian Kirk to get over the top on a home run. Getting gashed at the end of the game by Drake running through a hole that you can take an 18-wheeler through. That's not the coaches that are on the field. That's the players. So step up.
So the things that people like me who never played wonder is, doesn't someone, Keyshawn Johnson, in that locker room need to stand up and just, whether there's coaches in the room, players-only meeting, however you want to do it, and just make an announcement, guys, this stops now. We're done here. For what it's worth, we're in first place. Throw someone into a locker, whatever it is that players do to make it clear, you know, we're not having this nonsense on this team.
The leader is hurt right now, and that's Dak Prescott. We heard Ryan Clark talk about bacon. I like turkey bacon, by the way, and I like pork bacon. I don't eat a lot of it, but it tastes better. And when you don't have it and you have a bland sandwich, it's not the same. Right now, the Dallas Cowboys locker room is bland, because Dak Prescott's not there. And you say, well, what about some of the other guys? The only other guy that can maybe do that with that type of personality is Zeke. But when you fumble twice, players don't want to hear that, because that allowed them to score 21 unanswered points on you. So it's kind of like, who is the veteran guy? I remember when we, with the New York Jets, and you remember this well, in 99 when we lost Vinny Testaverde.
Yeah.
We had veteran guys, the Brian Coxes, the Mo Lewis, the Aaron Glenns, the myself, Curtis Martins, that would, you know, if we needed to get it right, we finally got it right, because we wouldn't stand for nothing less. And we also had a head coach on the sideline. Once his mind got wrapped, it wasn't going to happen. We also had a defensive coordinator, Bill Belichick. Wasn't going to happen. You've got to have that personality for Mike McCarthy as well as Mike Nolan to be able to say, enough. I'm not having it out of you. Somebody has to get got. Whoever it is, you may have to just whack a dude that nobody expected to cut. to get everybody's attention.
To be clear what Keyshawn is talking about, 1999, the Jets had a great team, and their starting quarterback, Vinny Testaverde, got hurt in the first game. And you and Bill Parcells, who was the head coach, kind of galvanized it and still put together a good season. So how does Mike McCarthy do that? If he walks in there today, this stuff is out there, right? I mean, it's in the ether, in the room. He walks in there today. What does he have to do?
You got
to
threaten him. You got to threaten somebody immediately. You got to find that person, whoever it is. Like I said, one that nobody expects. You know, one that it's just like, oh, he's the guy. He makes X amount of money. You just got to just, bam, get rid of him. I bet you everybody else stand up. I promise you that. They'll stand up and start paying attention because they don't want to be next. It's got to be somebody, though, with one of them $7 million salaries that nobody expects, and he's playing okay, but you just got to pick one out.
That'd be something else, something close to keep an eye
on. Got to get the attention. It's the head coach and the defensive coordinator. They got to get the attention of the team.
While I still have you here again, Keyshawn, KJZ across the hall every day, coast to coast on ESPN Radio. Let me ask you about the other big story yesterday. What did you think of the Dolphins going to Tua when they did at this stage in the season when the quarterback is playing pretty well and they're in a playoff chase?
Well, if you listen to our show in the mornings, which you probably don't have a chance to all the time, I mentioned this several weeks ago. I said right around bye time, they're going to go to Tua because it makes sense. You don't want to wait to the end of the year and understand 3-3, one game out of first place potentially. They're not going to beat Buffalo for the division. They're not going to beat New England and healthy Cam Newton for the division. So why not start the Tua process today? Okay, they're going up against the Rams and they come back off the bye. Aaron Donald's there. That's okay.
Yeah.
He played in the SEC. He knows what tough defenses are like. You let him mature. You burn this season. You were going to burn it anyway. You let him mature. And for Fitzy knew. You're there as a stopgap. You're there to teach so Tua learns how to be a professional quarterback, to sit in a professional room, take notes, those sort of things. He's there as a teacher. I'm fine with it, 100%.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, may genuine, I don't know exactly if this is what he would want his lot in life to be. He's the greatest bridge quarterback of all time, right? He's the perfect bridge quarterback.
Hey, he knows that. He knows why he's on teams. He's not on teams to take teams to the Super Bowl, despite what we think, because you're going to get 3 or 4 or 5 games of greatness. And then all of a sudden, you're going to get the disasters that we always see out of Fitzy.
All right, once again, KJZ across the hall and across the country. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin every morning on ESPN.
Let's go, Dodgers!
Oh, he's all psyched up. His Dodgers up 1-0 in the World Series. Great to see you, Keith. Thank you for stopping in. He's going back there. We're going on to this. Great games this weekend that could make or break your team's season. We've got the key factors that will decide them next on Get Up. Are you ready for some football? The Big Ten season begins this weekend. Saturday, we've got the oldest trophy game in history. Number 21 Minnesota hosting number 18 Michigan for the Little Brown Jug. That's 7:30 Eastern on ABC and the ESPN app. We are back on Get Up. We are commercial free for the next 15 minutes. And then at the top of the hour, it's First Take as Clayton Kershaw finally silenced his critics. And Justin Gaethje will be along live. That's First Take coming up 14 minutes from now. We are with you commercial free from now until then. As we look ahead to a terrific week in the NFL. One of the great games, of course, is the Steelers traveling to Nashville to play the Titans. Both teams 5-0. It's the eighth matchup between teams 5-0 or better in NFL history. Then Niners quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo makes his return to Foxborough for the first time as the Niners play the Patriots. Garoppolo will be the seventh quarterback to start a game for and against Bill Belichick. And finally, the Raiders have already beaten Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes, and now they take on Tom Brady. The Raiders can become the first team to beat three Super Bowl MVP winning quarterbacks within their first 6 games of a season. So let's do some time topics here with the guys and looking ahead to some of these games. Desmond, I'm going to start with you. What is the key for the Patriots to get back in the win column this weekend? 45 seconds, go.
The Patriots are reeling right now trying to put together an offensive line. I mean, last week against the Broncos, they used three different combinations during the game where guys playing multiple positions to try to put together an offensive line. And I think Cam Newton, he paid the price for it. Cam was constantly harassed in that game by the Broncos front 7. And then when Cam wasn't harassed, he was throwing some spotty passes. He had a chance late in the game to hit Damir Bird on a 50-yard touchdown, and he underthrew Damir Bird. That's because of the constant pressure he was getting throughout the other 3.5 quarters of the game. So I want to see if the Patriots are going to put together an offensive line against this 49ers front 7. That's the thing to look for.
Big weekend for them. RC, let's go to you on the Steelers and the Titans. Again, the battle of the unbeatens. What do you have your eye on?
I have my eye on the run game. Listen, this is Derrick Henry, the league's leading rusher last year, and now a guy who just comes off of over 200 yards against the Houston Texans, against a Pittsburgh Steelers defense that is built on stopping the run first, built on being physical. This reminds me of a 2008 game that we played against the New York Giants, who were the defending champs, and they brought in Brandon Jacobs, and we had to play against the big back. We had to be as physical as we possibly could be. We knew that was where the game started. So to me, the winner of the line of scrimmage, when the Pittsburgh Steelers are on defense and the Tennessee Titans are on offense, will win this game. If Derrick Henry can establish that physical level of play, if he can establish some type of dominance over this front, then they have a chance. But if Derrick Henry doesn't get going and they become one-dimensional, I don't care how well Ryan Tannehill is playing, that rush will get to him.
All right, and then, Neek, that leaves you with the Bucs and the Raiders. Who is the X factor you're focusing in on in that game?
I think it's very easy. It's Henry Ruggs III. I think a lot of people were surprised that he was drafted as high as he was over some of those other receivers in the draft last year. But the impact that he has had on this Raiders offense has been unbelievable. They're 3-0 with him playing. They're 0-2 without him. And I know it's not all because of him, but that offense is certainly very different with Henry Ruggs on the field because of the threat that he brings. He opens things up for other people. And if you aren't going to double him or put somebody over top of him, he will break the defense himself for a 40 or 50-yard touchdown. He is a special player because of that speed, and I know much is made about how little how unimportant receivers are to an offense, but I think that is a mischaracterization, especially when you look at the dynamics of this team. When they put Ruggs out there, he blows the roof off the defense, much like Tyreek Hill, and then everything else falls into place after that.
Well, let's stay on that game for a minute, Dominique. Let's do your unique perspective for this morning, because I know you are looking closely at that game, Dominique Foxworth. Look at that picture, by the way. Dominique, what is your unique perspective this morning?
Oh, my gosh. That is such a terrible name. I don't know which producer to hate because of it, but let them know unique perspective is awful, but we'll run with it. I do think that the Raiders will beat the Bucs this week, in part because Henry Ruggs is out there. But the Raiders are a lot better, and we give them credit for it. They're 3-2. But they've played the second toughest schedule so far in the league. And they had a big win last week that I think some people might consider a fluke. But if you look at the way that they've been playing, particularly on that offense, they've been playing a lot better. The front four on defense isn't as good as they want it to be. But I think John Gruden, Mike Mayock deserve a lot of credit for building a roster and playing well so far this season. I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. And they have a good chance, in my mind, of making the playoffs. And I do think, I'm not going to waffle on this or waiver at all, I think they beat the Bucs this weekend and surprise everybody.
That's John Gruden against his former team. So, you know, he'll have a lot of motivation for that. Ryan Clark, what do you think? Brady and the Bucs just looked so good against Green Bay. You rolling with that? You like Vegas to beat him this weekend?
You know what? I don't like Vegas to beat him because I think this is going to be another part of the maturation process of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers under Tom Brady, being able to handle success. We watched him handle the adversity of losing to the Chicago Bears, being so heavily penalized, and they come out, they play great defense. Tom Brady does exactly what he needs to do. So this is the next step, being able to handle that success and stack week after week. That's what Tom Brady and Bruce Arians are going to be preaching. And when you play as well as you did against the Green Bay Packers, you understand what Henry Ruggs, Darren Waller, and Josh Jacobs represent as a challenge to you offensively for the Las Vegas Raiders. So I look for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to come out even more motivated this week to win, with an understanding of who they're facing, and get another W in the column for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Graziano, what are you hearing as we lead into this? It's one of the most interesting games of the weekend.
Yeah, look, the Raiders are feeling very good. I'm with Dominique. I picked the Raiders to win this game. I think they're coming off of a bye. They've beaten, you know, the Saints and the Chiefs, in addition to the Panthers, who are better than you think. But the Saints and the Chiefs, those are their two big wins. They are getting healthy at the receiver position, and I think they're in a good space. The Raiders believe themselves to be contenders, and I would not be at all surprised to see them beat Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is coming off a game the Packers kind of handed to them. I like the Raiders.
All right, it's interesting. And then, Desmond, don't think that I'm gonna not give you the opportunity to respond. At the beginning of this conversation, Dominique said something about wide receivers not being very important. I can't believe, Desmond, that you're going to take that line down.
Well, you know, he couched it by saying it's a mischaracterization too. So yeah. I was all ears when he said that. I was like, wait, what? You know, I know in this game you don't like the unique whatever your name is in your little segment. I know that, but don't be dissing the Wild House. You know, so.
I was making the point that people don't understand how important receivers are. They look at their receptions,
right,
their targets, and their stats, and they think that's it. But I'm telling you, as a defensive player, when you go into a meeting room, as important as Josh Jacobs is, if he gets 10 yards, you're like, man, that stinks. But if a receiver gets behind your defense, that's 6 points. So I think receivers are a lot more important, especially fast ones.
RC, I was trying to read your reaction there.
No, he made a good point about Henry Ruggs III. I agree with him.
Ryan?
I think Dom is right. I just like the fact that Desmond was all ears because he was going to have to check him if he didn't fix it and say it the right way. See, this is what Culture Wednesday is about, Greeny. Like, right now, do I care about Vegas and do I care about the Bucks? Absolutely. I more so care about what's going on this show. And
give
that's Greeny what is important
back
to me.
Dude, can Henry Ruggs, back, Ryan.
Yeah, can Henry Ruggs take the top off? Yes. But who cares? What's more important is that Dez was going to check Dom if Dom ain't said right. That's what today's about. Today has been great. Continue,
I'll tell
Greeny.
You,
this
I'll
is
tell you
your
what's
show.
Even more important than that. And it's what everyone is reacting to. I know this business well enough to know. You could do 2 hours of great sports conversation. But everyone on Twitter is reacting to the fact that Desmond has that album cover behind him right there. And that I said Off the Wall is a better album than Thriller. And once again, I will defend that. Dominique seems to agree with me. That's what everyone is going to react to today.
Exactly.
Okay, fair enough. Left everyone silenced by that. Let me get back to the sports. Earlier this morning,
Brian
Flores confirmed that Tua Tagovailoa will emerge from this Week 7 bye as the Dolphins' starting quarterback. That pushes 16-year veteran Ryan Fitzpatrick into the backup role as the NFL trade deadline approaches on November 3rd. So I have two questions related to that. The first is for my friend Mr. Graziano. Do you believe the Dolphins, now that they have given the ball to Tua, would entertain trade considerations for Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I don't think that's their intention. I mean, as is the case with almost anyone, if someone calls and makes a great offer, you listen. But they believe Ryan Fitzpatrick is important for Tua Tagovailoa, that he's already been extremely helpful to his development, that he'll continue to be extremely helpful for his development. And don't underestimate this. If something goes wrong with Tua, if it turns out he's not ready, if he were to, you know, hopefully it doesn't happen, if he were to get injured, Fitzpatrick is not a guy who's going to, you know, shut down because he got benched. He knew this was coming, and if they need him again, they'll get what they've been getting from him so far this season.
It's an interesting point, though. So let me sort of flip it then on its other side. Dominique, should someone be calling Miami for him? Is there a team out there that you think is Ryan Fitzpatrick away from making maybe a deep playoff run?
I mean, the thing is, Ryan Fitzpatrick is not the quarterback that you think of is going to take you deep in the playoffs. But you said it earlier, is he's like the best bridge quarterback in history. And I think that maybe the Browns are looking for a bridge quarterback right now. So that's the only team that I would consider right now, because they're a team that would love to make the playoffs, don't need to win the Super Bowl. But I think it's unlikely that they're going to go that direction because they got another bridge quarterback on their bench in Case Keenum. I think they're more likely to hand the reins to Case Keenum and have him be their bridge than go after Fitzpatrick.
Browns were one of the places that I was thinking of, Ryan, and the Cowboys are the other. If they don't believe that Andy Dalton has one bad night, would they be better off? Would those two teams, in your mind, RC, be better off with Ryan Fitzpatrick than what they have?
Greeny, I'm going to do a little hosting and ask a question. Has any team in Ryan Fitzpatrick over a decade and a half of football been a Ryan Fitzpatrick away from a deep playoff run? Just any of them. No, and they ain't going to be a team now. He is an excellent bridge quarterback, whether it's Golden Gate, Brooklyn, the greater GNO. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. But I also think he's the perfect piece to what the Miami Dolphins are doing. You don't know how well Tua is going to play. You don't know if he gets injured. And what you do know is if you put Ryan Fitzpatrick back in there, he picks up right where he left off because he's self-aware. He's used to being in this position. Ryan Fitzpatrick is supposed to be a Miami Dolphin right now. This is his time to be the leader of that team still. And so I don't think they trade him, but I also don't believe that he's the quarterback that goes somewhere else and makes that huge of a difference based on if they're going to win playoff games or not.
Okay, and so with that thought in mind, let's finish it up with Tua. And again, Desmond Howard, you who covered him all through college, do you believe he is ready to step in right now for a team that's playing well and might be thinking postseason thoughts? Is he going to step in there and play that well immediately for Miami?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each one-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
The thing I know about Brian Flores, Green, is he's a straight shooter. He shoots from the hip, and he's been a guy who he hasn't strayed away from his message or Chris Greer's message from day one. And they said that when Tua is ready, and they believe that he is, they're going to put him out there on the field. So now it's time to take him out of the bubble wrap and let him do what they drafted him to do. So I believe that they think that they've seen enough, that he's ready. And I think he's going to add an extra element to this offense, that they're going to be a little more explosive than people expect. So I'm excited about this move with Tua starting in 2 weeks for the Miami Dolphins.
And there are two factors in the timing, Dan Graziano, quickly here, as we're just about out of time, that may have adjusted things. One, their bye week got moved up based on the coronavirus changes. Two, the other rookie quarterbacks have played so well. The Justin Herbert performance, that has to have placed some pressure to some degree on the Dolphins here.
No, I don't think that has influenced the Dolphins. I really believe that I have approached this as this is our plan and our quarterback of the future. I think if you look around the league and you see Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow performing well, it might give you a little bit of internal confidence, like, hey, a rookie can succeed right away, and we believe our guy has the stuff inside of him to do it. But this was all about Tua and when he's ready and when he's ready to help them.
Okay, and so the question that I put up on Twitter today at ESPN Greeny is, which team do you think wins that division with Tua at quarterback?
Good.
And not too many
gracious.
People buying the Dolphins. Hashtag Bills Mafia is out in full force today. No question, 70% backing the Bills. A little support for New England, even less for Miami, and other is the choice.
Who could that,
that
be?
I put up there in the last one. Okay, very quickly, because it's what everyone's talking about. Desmond, what was the thinking behind that album choice today?
Oh, wow. You know, my studio producer, my son, Little Twin, a.k.a. Desmond Jr., he picked it. So Desmond picked the album today. I can't even take credit for it.
Okay. I got to give him credit because it's all anyone is talking about. My phone is blown up with the conversation about the Michael Jackson albums. Okay. Great fun today, guys. Thank you all very much. Again, we began with the Dodgers. They win game one of the World Series last night. Much more coverage of that as we continue through until tomorrow. I will see you coast to coast, noon Eastern on ESPN Radio. But the fun and conversation continues with First Take right now on ESPN.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.